Welcome to Sherry Edwards' Sound Health Radio Show. As you have probably guessed, I am not Sherry Edwards, but we have an amazing and informative show for you today anyway.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Simmons.
And I'm TJ Johnston.
And we'd like to thank you for tuning in to Sound Health. Our program is brought to you by the Institute for Bioacoustic Biological Research and BBS Radio. The music that you just heard was from Jill Mattson off her album, You Are Stardust. It's the My Children track number 2 off the CD.
All right, and thank you for joining us. Our guest today is that musician. She's a gifted writer, painter, researcher, composer, musician, and a purveyor of unique thoughts and ideas. She has written the book Transformative Power and Sound and has created 4 CDs, all of which are available at her website, jillwingsoflight.com. We have talked to her before on Sound Health Radio and found her to be a delightful guest. Jill Mattson, welcome to our show. How are you doing today?
I'm doing very fine. Thank you very much.
Excellent, excellent. Thank you so much for joining us today. Jill, for our listeners that do not know you, could you tell us a little more about yourself and about how you initially got interested in the effects of sound and music?
Sure. I have a love for antiquity, and I've read antiquity for 15 to 20 years, reading over 1,000 volumes. Mm-hmm. And I've read from many different cultures and many different societies. I particularly like mystic societies, like the Tibetan monks or the ancient Chinese, or the Persians and the Egyptians and the Druids and so forth, and their meditations and their spiritual information.
Okay, excellent.
And also, ever since I can remember, I've just been touched by music and a wonderful musician. It's just been a gift, a big gift. So when I read all this antiquity, I would occasionally find things on sound and music, and it's like I would just feel like I was a flower that just bloomed when I would read these sections. So I started to keep little notebooks, and one of the things that I found that was throughout antiquity that sound and music was considered very powerful because it was a tremendous influence on people.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, in the ancient Chinese, they write that they used it rather than a police force to control their people, because it controlled their brainwaves, it controlled their physical bodies, it controlled their thinking, and since there was much more control, it wasn't like anybody could turn on a radio, they were able to control what frequencies people were exposed to. And I know at first glance I thought that was kind of silly, but then they did have dynasties that lasted for several thousands of years each.
So, wow.
They were, hey, after 4 years, we're done with our president. And so they were revered secrets. And within the different mystery schools, and I went from society to society, they usually had levels that equated to like initiate, disciple, adept, and master. And they historically hid their information because if it got into the wrong hands, it could be used or abused. For example, Hitler was into mystic information and was using it for power. So they wanted to guard their information, and you had to kind of like prove yourself,
mm-hmm,
before they would allow you, their secrets. And many of the sound and music secrets were not committed to writing because they were the most powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Again, they could have such a significant influence. They could be used to control populations and civilizations.
Mm-hmm, right.
But I just read so many societies, and each society would leak out this and that and this technique and that. And by the time I got done this 15, 20-year read, I had, like, notebooks and notebooks and notebooks.
Now, is that how you started into becoming an author?
Yes.
Great.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. I felt like, I don't know, somehow I was just truly led. When I was getting ready to write the book, people I didn't even know would walk up to me and say, "This book speaks to you." I remember one time, I know this sounds kind of weird, but I saw like a green light outside of my car, and I followed it, and it took me to some strange little bookstore, and there was my next piece of research. And then the first book that I wrote, which was Transformative Power and Sound,
mm-hmm,
I had interviews, and they just unfolded. They just happened, and they happened in the right order in the book. So I felt it was meant to be, and I just interviewed modern. Well, I interviewed one guru mm-hmm. from India who has like 50 cities of followers. He's very popular. He's not a guru, which means he heals with sound.
Okay.
And he does huge healing concerts in which he will assess what is the major illness in the audience and then play a song to, you know, benefit it.
Okay.
So anyway, and then I went, started with him, and then I went from like a modern researcher to a modern researcher to a modern researcher. And they would each talk about what they had done to prove or to use or how to apply these techniques of using sound to modify your mental outlook or your physical health or your emotions or your spirituality.
Oh, excellent, excellent.
So now you've been working on another book about sound health and human bioacoustics.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like to talk to us about that book?
Oh, of course, of course.
Thank you.
I was so honored to meet Sherry, and the depth of her understanding of how and why sound healing works was impeccable. Not only was the depth of information outstanding, but with this expanded, broad use of sound healing, like she had... with the kind of information that I learned from her, I could see a wider application of usage of sound healing in terms of furthering scientific development, in terms of medical diagnostics and treatment,
mm-hmm.
in terms of crop growth, in terms of different things in our environment and relationships, nurturing of feelings, and again, I would say. Impact on civilization if used properly.
Mm-hmm.
So I was very honored to get to work with her and to write about her wonderful contributions.
Great. Now, how long have you been involved with Sherry Edwards, and how long did it take you to write the book?
I spent about the last 7 months, maybe, 70, 80 hours a week for 7 months.
Wow.
Now, I have a pretty good understanding coming into it. You know, I've spent 15, 20 years on it, so that helps as well.
Indeed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Since you were talking about all the experience you've had, how does Sherry's bioacoustic research relate to your own research in sound and sound healing?
Okay. Well, first of all, I guess I'd have to break my research, like, into two parts.
Mm-hmm.
One would be antiquity. And then one would be research today.
Okay.
With antiquity, their concept of music was much, much different than what we have today. I would say today music's viewed as entertainment,
mm-hmm.
Kind of like you do a crossword puzzle, you turn on the radio. It's not a very important element. But that was not the way it was in antiquity. Music was controlled by the government. And it was controlled consciously, and it was controlled for specific purposes.
Mm-hmm.
And when you read about antiquity, and again, I'm just telling you what I've read. I obviously can't verify it to be true.
Mm-hmm.
But in the readings, they talk about different civilizations having purposes, like expanding your emotional abilities, or they talk about involving into matter, becoming further and further more into duality or away from God, and how that you would use tones to do the opposite of evolution, do involution.
Hmm.
They talk about, times of war and peace and when civilizations are going to learn new lessons and new ways of life, that the music changes. And so antiquity sees music more as an underpinning of how and why things work,
mm-hmm.
which I would say dovetails very nicely into what Sherry's doing, because she has expanded the knowledge of sound healing so deeply and with such great breadth that it has so many different applications.
Mm-hmm.
And when you think of the applications and really apply it to a civilization, it's pretty overwhelming. For example, her little tool, the nano voice, is a tool to help you look at your emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say, and antiquity would say, because they refer to this time period, as a time period when we have not honored our feelings. It's a time period when we have expanded our mind
mm-hmm.
in the last couple thousand years, particularly the last 500. And I think history proves that out. We certainly have expanded our mind, and there's a lot of scientific inventions and things from our using our minds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I would say that our developing our heart has taken a back seat.
Mm-hmm.
And we deny these types of things. And if you look at world issues, you look at war and peace, well, if people were really harmonious, you wouldn't have war.
Right.
And, you know, when you look at world famine, if people had compassion, they would share more. If
mm-hmm.
you look at crime, you know, again, it's poorly managed emotions in people's developments that leads them to difficult behavior. And you can look at almost all of the social maladies, like abuse, and
mm-hmm.
and pull them all back to if somebody had been able, or maybe their family or the person had been able to develop and maintain harmony and inner peace and understand their emotions on a deeper level, you know, that would really have a big impact.
Mm-hmm.
And what the nano voice does is, with the implication of what she's uncovered, is that you're running emotions all the time. And so they're all constantly, things are going down into like the playground of your subconscious.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't know that we don't know. So we're all walking around half clueless, and then our behavior just seems to happen. Whereas if you could take a look at what's going on down beneath your conscious mind, then you have ability to pick and choose who you want to be. And I think it's astounding how much we don't know. For example,
mm-hmm.
I teach violin. I teach all kinds of instruments, but violin's the hardest startup.
Right.
And when you first start the violin, it's hard because you have to play one note, you have to do six skills all at once.
Mm-hmm.
And when you first start, I found that everybody makes identical mistakes. They think about what is the next note, they're trying to remember which finger, and everything else gets averaged. Their timing, their dynamics, how much they move their bow.
Mm-hmm.
It's all going on to a default. It's like a computer, and you can only run one program at once, and everything else goes to default.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like that. It's like when we're concentrating on one thing, that doesn't mean we're not creating emotions.
Right.
We are.
Sure.
And so it just means that our mind only has one window open at a time, and everything goes below.
Mm-hmm.
And everything goes below affects us.
Mm-hmm.
And like that little nano voice, it seems like a simple little thing, but it could have a very profound impact if used properly.
Sure. And Jill, can you tell us just a little bit what you know about the nano voice so people know what we're talking about when you say nano voice?
Sure. The nano voice is a program that Sherry developed, and it's a freeware program at nanovoice.org is where you can get it. And it comes with the free program and downloadable instructions. And also my book, I give you a section, quite a bit of section, because it's you have to learn how to use it. It's, as I said, if properly used,
mm-hmm.
and it takes a little while, I think, to get the implications of what you can do with this.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
But what it does is it shows us the pitches in your voice, and then there's a chart included that shows you the emotions that are associated with each pitch.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you were to raise those pitch up on the electromagnetic spectrum, or if you were to translate them into colors, you can group different emotions with different colors. And our language does that, you know, like green with envy, or I was so blue,
mm-hmm.
or
sure.
I was so red, I was so mad, you know.
Right.
So, but anyway, so they come in colors, and they come in pitches. And they show different emotions that you may or may not be conscious of. And then, like in my book, I go in and show some of the other further discoveries, like little different, one little trick is like a little combination of a balance in your A and your E sharp will come out when you're being honest. If you're kind of hiding something from yourself, which we all do more than we are aware of.
Mm-hmm.
then those notes will be unbalanced, which will give you a clue to start digging. Something's bothering you that you haven't allowed to surface.
Okay.
And it will surface, but you want to be prepared about it and make a conscious decision rather than having your behavior just kind of like blow up through the surface and control your behavior. That's not very productive.
Right.
Sure.
Yeah.
It's just another tool to help you know yourself, so you don't go doing something you don't want to do.
Right.
Which a lot of people get in trouble with, I've seen in my lifetime.
Yeah.
So we just talked about sound healing, but you talked a little bit about your antiquities and other things. Can you tell us about your other parts of your research that don't have so much to do with healing?
Okay. If you look at the various physicists and mm-hmm. Scientists in the psychology field,
right.
I found that you can find a vast amount of proof of different pieces of what Shari teaches about. There is no one particular scientist that would explain the entire system, because mm-hmm. she's got a system that's very broad.
Mm-hmm.
But I found going through physicists' work and chemistry works, and even books on nutrition and psychology and psychiatric kinds of things,
mm-hmm.
I found all kinds of corroboration.
Okay. Like what things?
Well, let me think. Well, Candace Pert, for example, she's done some work on neurotransmitters, and
mm-hmm.
and I think it's a James Oshman. Also, there's quite a few of them that basically talk about the communication between different cells in your body, and that messages are sent and received through vibrations. In other words, each vibration would have a specific meaning, and the cells can communicate through that.
Mm-hmm.
And then Dr. Becker, then there was numerous different physicists, but he was one that comes to mind. He was showing that the body, one very powerful communication mechanism in the body, it's not just from the brain with the nerves, but it's the tissues that surround the nerves. He calls it the perennial tissue system,
mm-hmm.
but at any rate, the tissues around the nerves. And that vibrations go through them as well as through the nerves. It's kind of like the nerves is the fast, down and dirty message, whereas the communication that goes through the tissue to tissue, cell to cell, is very accurate and slower. And that's usually your lower frequencies. And he did a lot of work tying that into sunspots and molten iron and astrological energies.
Mm-hmm.
He tied that into how magnetism and how animals know north and south. And he tied that into different body cycles that
mm-hmm.
That are influenced by these types of low-level electromagnetic frequencies. And his research shows that probably the most important communication or most powerful communication, and he believes, now he did not prove this point, but he believes your consciousness is communicated in on the perennial tissue system.
Okay.
Wow.
And yeah, so that's, well, he didn't prove that, but he felt he hypothesized that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
But he did prove that the perennial tissue system was communicating a vast amount of information, and it's all low-level frequencies, and that it's influenced by a lot of things in nature.
Okay.
Great. Now, you seem so knowledgeable, Jill, and we know that you've done a lot of research. We also know that you took Shari's vocal profiling class.
Mm-hmm.
How instrumental was that for you in gaining your knowledge and understanding a lot of the things you're talking about?
Well, I think the best part about Shari's class is that the class teaches you how to use her material.
Mm-hmm.
It teaches you how to diagnose issues in people's voice, particularly health issues, or perhaps sports-related issues. But primarily, I would say different health issues, to bring them to the forefront, and most excitedly to balance them and harmonize them, to show whether they're predictive or now or chronic, so you can harmonize things before they happen, and to give you a procedure and a method to work on them once they're already established. I would say that it's those people who take the course, I think they need to be prepared to work. And it's not like a walk in the park, because it's a science with depth and breadth. And so it takes some work and some understanding and a little bit of application. I would also suggest that after the course that they offer free Sunday classes, that people would take advantage of those and put up a realistic time frame that this is going to take a little bit to learn.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the reason why it takes a little bit to learn is that what she's done is she's come up with various ideas, hypotheses, if you will, of how and why this works. And I think the important thing to keep in mind is that she gets results.
Mm-hmm.
She kind of like goes backwards. This works, and then she tries to explain and get other corroborating in, you know, a scientist to figure out how it works.
Right.
So she kind of goes backwards. So, but when you go backwards like that and you come up with unconventional ideas, although the idea is not hard, it's not, you don't have to be a whiz child to understand it. When it's new, it takes you a while to kind of like filter through, particularly if it's against the grain of something you grew up with, an idea or a thought that you grew up with.
Sure.
And there's a lot of that.
Yeah, I know I had a really hard time when I first started working here, just getting past the whole, getting past the conventional medicine and seeing that I really had to see for myself that it worked before I even started really getting into it.
Right.
It was almost weird. I feel kind of bad that I wasn't as open-minded as I could be, and I think just kind of us as a society are trained to be suspicious of everything.
Yeah, and the other thing, too, is like, I think to some extent we're programmed, and what we've learned as a child we sometimes think is true.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't matter whether it's sound health or something else. When a new idea comes through, it's usually met with opposition.
Right, right.
And that's just because I think what happens is, from my research is that, you know, when things get repeated, it's like the more you hear it, the more you believe it to be true.
Right.
And so it just becomes a foundation of your truth. Now, is it truth? Well, maybe, maybe not. But it's the truth that you've been told.
Right.
Or the truth that you've chosen. And then when someone has a new and better idea, it's often met with opposition.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. And I want to let everyone know, too, that we have classes, and the next class available is June 22nd through the 26th, and then in July from the 13th to the 17th. And anybody needs more information on that, they can go to soundhealthinc.com. And then it's a good opportunity to learn some of the information that Jill's sharing with us today.
You can also contact us at 740-698-9119, and we'll give you as much information as you need. Jill, with your new book, what message do you want to convey with it? What do you want to tell the masses?
Well, I want to tell them that sound healing has something in it for everything. That if we understand the power in sound and vibration, that we can change our world. From making our civilizations better to making our minute interactions with our next-door neighbor better, to helping our sore foot heal, to keeping our nature more pure. We could use it instead of pesticides, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So there's so many applications. There's no one that's not going to benefit from this.
Indeed, indeed.
And when I wrote the book, I divided it into three parts so that I could hit a very broad audience. The first part is a background information overview and kind of a state of the art of what's going on in sound health, and Shari's personal story and how she developed it.
Okay.
And then for those people who weren't technical, they could skip over the next part. But for those people who were interested in science or perhaps wanted precise details for their practice or for their healing practice, if they want to use sound to augment their massage therapy or another modality.
Mm-hmm.
For those people who are a musician, like me, would love this. People who are into astronomy, this is a must read.
Mm-hmm.
Mystics, this is fabulous. This is like hardcore stuff. For those people who are interested in spirituality or a religious experience,
mm-hmm.
You can, in the ancient peoples, and in the Old Testament, for example, they used to talk about when you get close to God, you quicken your spirit. And
mm-hmm.
they're talking about becoming more harmonious and raising your overall pitch.
Mm-hmm.
And one of Valerie Hunt, one of a very esteemed scientist, was able to, you know, measure people's, you know, overall frequencies and found when you get to a certain point, you have like a religious experience. And so that many of the things that we considered religious can shortly be scientific,
mm-hmm.
and that you can use sound health for improving your emotions,
mm-hmm.
Understanding yourself, which I don't even think all of us appreciate what that means and how beneficial that is.
Right.
We can improve our memory, our mental activity, our environment, our relationships. It's just very broad. And then I go into the third part of the book, which is not quite so technical,
mm-hmm.
and that is on the applications. And I went into the Nana voice because I think that's a very powerful piece. And taking the classes and the products that Sound Health has to offer. I also went into using music and then other different just free applications of using sound to make your life very different.
Mm-hmm.
For example, I talk about the sounds of silence. That's an ancient meditation practice and how you can use that and different ancient techniques that are free that use kind of what Shari's talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And then I end up with a section on consciously changing your voice to accomplish what you want.
Okay.
You know, like Jesus, for example, he healed with his voice. He said, be well.
Mm-hmm.
That was it. And I would like to suggest that there's really something in how he said, be well. And that you can consciously think about what you're adding into your voice and the implications that it has on you know, many levels,
mm-hmm.
and simply empowering yourself.
Hmm.
So anyway, I have the book for a very wide audience.
Good.
And I think it's a lot of fun.
It sounds like it would be a great read for really just about anyone who is even remotely interested in. And the science and everything behind it.
Mm.
When will the book be available, Jill?
Probably have it available myself at my website in a couple of months.
Okay.
It takes a while after that to get it to the bookstores. So maybe in about 6 months, if you wanted to see it at your bookstore, you know, you just call your bookstore and ask them to get it. That's pretty simple.
Uh-huh.
But in the meantime, if somebody would like to have me alert them when it's available, they could just personally email me if they'd like.
Okay.
It's Jill, J-I-L-L-I, Matson, M-A-T-T-S-O-N, at Yahoo.
Okay.
I couldn't use Jill Matson. Somebody had already taken that.
And what is your website,
at
Jill?
At Yahoo. The website is Jill's Wings of Light, J-I-L-L-S, Wings of Light. And you might have to do http://, sometimes. Some people do.
Right.
You know.
Sure.
And then there's one other link that I have. I have a couple free MP3s about my music. And also I do a sound healing newsletter. And that is at www.jillshealingmusic.com.
Okay. Excellent.
Now, Jill, have you actually completed the book, or are you still working on it?
Well, I would say the book is done. I'm working on the cover.
Okay.
And the printing arrangements.
Do you have a title for the book yet?
No, I've got some finalist, but no, not yet.
Okay, great. Excellent. I don't want to jinx the book by having say any of the titles.
We don't want to take out away the pizzazz from the big revelation of the title of the book.
Oh, indeed, you're kind. You're kind.
All right, you talked a little bit earlier about people not really understanding what knowing yourself really meant. Could you explain that a little more? Because that sounded very interesting to me.
Well, I would say if you go down through all the ages, all of the great sages, all of the people of great wisdom talk about how difficult it is to know yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I've always known that because I've been able to surprise myself and catch myself. I'd like to think I really know myself, and I'm a fine artist painter, and I do a lot of oil paintings,
mm-hmm.
and I often find I paint things that I have not allowed to surface.
Mm-hmm.
And I do it with such regularity that it's very humbling
mm-hmm.
in terms of thinking that I do know myself, and I've pretty much gotten the opinion that no matter how evolved or wonderful a person is, we're just like an onion ring,
mm-hmm.
and there's always another layer to know ourselves more deeply.
Indeed.
And another of the really exciting things, I think, that Sherry's come to light is that how that your emotion can be triggered by your environment and by energies coming from the stars. She was showing some of these low frequencies that come in. My research says that that's from the simply planets moving. They create a vibration,
mm-hmm.
the very low vibration that comes in. Well, guess what? When that hits the Earth and it's a certain frequency,
mm-hmm.
it's below our hearing range, but it's right in the area which affects some of the waves and it's kind of like the beginning process of our thoughts, feelings, and emotions,
mm-hmm.
so that we can be triggered. It's like I think of myself now more like a piano,
mm-hmm.
and if you open up the piano, there's all these strings, and I go around and other people pluck them.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes, I can play my own song, but I also have to deal with other people plucking me, tripping my trigger, and so it's kind of like a balancing act. It's an interaction.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's learning to harmonize with your environment, and it's learning to deal with difficult situations, and I guess these difficult situations are here for us to learn to know ourselves on a more deeper level.
Mm-hmm.
And so I found the book very illuminating then, and also the Nana voice or any type of tool like that that shows you to what degree we aren't honest with ourselves. And I think most of us will agree that we can bury negative things, but I would like to suggest that we bury a whole lot more. We bury mundane things. We
mm-hmm.
bury all kinds of things, and not because we're not even willing to face it, because we're like a computer. We only have one screen at a time that's open.
Mm-hmm.
But we have 5 or 6 or 8 or 10 running.
Right.
And so they're just not all in our consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And some things might be low-level information coming in, but after a while, they build up and they can have quite a significant impact
mm-hmm.
on our health, on our genetics, on our emotions, our thoughts, our feelings. So I think when you get to know yourself, it's not only knowing who you are and how you react, but it's also knowing how other things affect you and maybe what you can't control.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the big thing then becomes is who you want to be.
Right.
And I would say that the knowledge of this sound healing is a really powerful tool because it helps you see deeper into who you are. It helps you define and achieve who you want to be.
Great.
If you use it properly.
Indeed.
So now how do you think the vocal profiling can change the face of medicine? What kind of things do you think it's going to bring about change in the future?
Well, the late psychic Edgar Cayce said that vibrational medicine was the future of medicine, and I guess I would have to say that's just our destiny, because if you look at the soaring costs of medical costs, and then if you think about what can be done with Chari uses a fast Fourier transform to analyze the pitches in your voice,
mm-hmm.
and if you look at some of the differences in cost and some of the differences in invasive treatment and side effects and so forth, it's almost got to be the future.
Yeah.
And it's going to take a while because people historically reject anything that's quite new.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, in time, it's the way. I think the diagnostic and the treatment components are powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And also the contributions to science and research. We have a new way of taking a look at our physical bodies and our emotional bodies and our mental bodies now.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Yeah, and it's much, much better than, like, exploratory surgery and things like
right.
that.
Right, why not?
Indeed.
And it fits in nicely with many of the different types of alternative medicine.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, Jill, what do you think your own research, just overall, can provide, like, new understanding for our modern age? Like, what things?
Well, I would say that when I, not only did I research history, but I researched for thousands and thousands of years.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I can't say how true is everything that I've read, especially
right,
if
right.
you read these little snippets of 4,000 and 6,000 years ago. Sometimes they're even hard to understand because they had different societies and thoughts and feelings then.
Right.
But it appeared to me in my research that over the past, and this is further than our history books go, I'm just talking about like snippets of, mm-hmm. of antiquity, that mankind has been like involving into matter. We've becoming further and further away from God. Not so much as a judgmental thing. I'm just saying maybe like as a scientific thing, like you like a magnet getting more powerful or something,
mm-hmm.
like the duality getting greater. And it also appears to me that the forerunner for those types of changes were music,
mm-hmm.
and that the different chords, the different types of songs, the different harmonics, the different rhythms, all these things can influence you because we're vibratory at heart. And I'll give you just a small example, and then I'll go back to the bigger picture. But in the smaller example, I read, again, this is reading, and I can't verify it, but
mm-hmm.
I read that it was the classical music that brought Europe out of the Dark Ages.
Mm-hmm.
It was the Renaissance harmony and the pitches that enabled people to do better. And in this one book I read, it was supposedly written by ascended masters, and they talked about the fact that it had worked. It's like music's like not a good or bad thing. It's like a telephone wire. You know, you can say good or bad things on it. And they talked about the music bringing people out of the Dark Ages, but how many people in the Victorian age had a pretty house and a pretty dress and
mm-hmm.
had a very cold heart.
Right.
And then they talked about bringing in Beethoven, and I find Beethoven just drains my soul of every amount of passion. I mean, I'm very affected by music and very
mm-hmm.
affected by his music. And I can't imagine people listening, really listening with their soul to what he has to say and not being able to have more compassion.
Mm-hmm.
And this one book did note that there were no charities prior to Beethoven's music in Europe. None.
Hmm.
They all started afterwards.
Wow.
It's an interesting tidbit.
Yeah, and you know, I could go on lots of those, but that's not what this show is about. But the point being is that I believe that music has enabled us as a civilization to have experiences and to learn and develop. And now we can go backwards for those of us who want to evolve and get close to God and improve themselves. The most powerful tool out there is music, and that's what I do in my CDs. I do know what they did throughout these different periods, so I am creating music and writing CDs that take you right back, taking the steps backwards. And in another thing with music and sound, I believe that you're a part of the miracle. Like when Jesus was walking on that path and some lady touched his cloak and he turns around and he says, who touched my cloak? And some lady says, oh, it was me. And he said, your faith has made you well. And she was, of course, immediately well when she touched his cloak.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what he's saying is, you're a part of this miracle. It wasn't just touching my cloak. It was that you believed.
Right.
And I think that when you listen to sound and music, how you listen has a big part. Like if it's like elevator music and you're not paying attention, its impact is less than if you sit still and you allow it to play you.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can use music as a powerful tool, and you can increase its potency by choosing to be a part of the miracle.
Indeed. Jill, I've always thought that musicians have always had like a unique insight into the workings of the body and the soul. And you yourself are a musician, and you said you've put out some CDs. Would you like to talk about those a little bit?
Sure.
Excellent. Sure. Yeah, please talk about those.
Okay. Well, I have three sets. I got many more in the making, but one is called Paint Your Soul.
Mm-hmm.
And I used patterns of numbers found in nature. And everything that's a number can be converted to music, for music is math.
Mm-hmm.
Because each note would have a certain amount of sound waves per second, and that would be your conversion tool from the musical note
mm-hmm.
to math. So I've taken the most common patterns found in nature that God must have used, or whoever created our world. He used, you know, not too many different music, not too many mathematical patterns, and so I've converted them into music.
Hmm.
They aren't on our pianos. Because they're in between the notes, and as we've, in this historical thing that I've observed, evolved away from God, you know, we don't hear them when we turn on our radio, so they're
right.
on tuning forks to get the pitches in between. And because we haven't heard them for so long, when people hear them by themselves, at first they're quite difficult to listen to. So what I did was I just sit down and let music flow through me. I'm very lucky that way. I just sit down and out comes a song.
Mm-hmm.
And so I let the music flow through me. And then I've added all of these tones in the background, kind of like wind chimes.
Mm-hmm.
And then in that particular group of music, I also found, I read about someone else finding a scale encoded in the Bible in numbers. And I read a couple other volumes in antiquity talking about the same scale, and from what I've read is that it's called the solfeggio scale, and it's like with the Catholic Mass, I've read that when they have those little bells, like when the Pope died, that would
mm-hmm.
be the solfeggio scale, that it's a healing scale.
Okay.
And there's like a clinic, there's a clinic in Ohio, it's fairly developed, it's just healing with these tones.
Hmm.
And I have that in there. And then I'm a channel, kind of like the late Edgar Cayce. And one of the things that I noted when I channel, like as he did, was that I could always tell who's going to come speaking through me before they start to speak. It's like I can feel them.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you think about it, and you were to think that your mother was sitting next to you, you know what she feels like.
Mm-hmm.
And just the same, every beautiful being, every advanced person, every wonderful person, they have a feeling.
Right.
And that it's recordable.
Mm-hmm.
Since I'm a recording artist, I also noted that I could have a silence and I can tell you who it is just because I've done it so much.
Hmm.
Just like if your mother was in the room and if you had recorded that, you might think she was standing behind you.
Right.
Because it feels like her. So I also recorded all these beautiful beings, and I put them on all my music.
Okay.
So anyway, so that's that one. And then the second one, Stardust, the You Are Stardust,
mm-hmm.
I was intrigued by the ancient Chinese. They felt that everything was about balance, and
mm-hmm.
they were very much interested in being harmonious. And I would say that, again, this jives with what Shari does, because she's balancing the harmonics in your voice, but that implies that she's balancing you on every level. Mm-hmm. Your electrical, your magnetic, your nutritional, your chemical, your muscles, your nerves, your transmitters. On every level, she's looking for balance.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to do it frequently because you walk outside and you have all these EMS, all these other things, you know, molten iron from the center of the earth can get you off balance, and
mm-hmm.
genetics, all these other things going on. So they were into balance. And the biggest thing that they did for balancing was they balanced with the stars. They had music of the stars. It's certain, their time period and their clock, of course, was based on the rotation of the constellations in the sky, and during the, you know, different constellation periods, they changed their music.
Okay.
The idea was to, as that low analog frequency comes in and affects us,
mm-hmm.
was to balance any challenges. And then they would also balance for the season. For example, you need a little bit different music and harmony in the winter
mm-hmm.
than you do in the summer. You need a little music and harmony that's a little bit different to balance you in a desert than you do in the jungle.
Hmm.
So that these, because plants and all everything around us is vibratory as well, and there's no real clear-cut lines when it comes to vibrations.
Right.
Because we prove that they all interact.
Mm-hmm.
So the Chinese had this art of just balancing, you know, for everything, for better mind, for better emotions, to get rid of your illness. And so what they did was a system, which I did prior to even meeting Sherry, but it's not too terribly far off from what she's doing. In fact, it's very close, is that they sign pitches for each one of the constellations. And I found a physicist, a German physicist named Hans Cousteau, who had come up for a formula for pitch of a ball on a string.
Hmm.
And so he, depending on the length of the string and how big the ball was, if he could tell you the pitch, if he had a stick and kind of, you know, ball and a string and he was kind of swinging it around. So with that, I was able to come up with the pitches of the planets give off.
Okay.
So I used those because that's what the ancient Chinese said, that's your biggest balancing factor.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also added the frequency equivalents for carbon, hydrogen, oxygen, nitrogen, because they're a part of our body. They're also some of the trace elements found in space.
Okay.
So the twinkling stars is in that one.
Mm.
Then my next series, which will be out very soon, it's done. I just have to get it out. But
fantastic.
It's this next one is on healing flower symphonies.
Huh.
And because I really believe the biggest thing to impact our civilization, it's our emotions. If we can learn to develop a heart like we've developed our mind
mm-hmm.
and have emotional intelligence and emotional control. Even with intelligence, I don't mean to downplay it, but so many people go to school and then you get a dead-end job and you come home and you watch TV. You know, the need for intellectual stimulation sometimes isn't as great as the need for emotional stimulation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you graduate from high school, you get married, you know, most people, over 50% get divorced, you lose your jobs. You have health issues, you have relationship issues, you can get in trouble, financial problems, and emotional challenges just don't stop.
Mm-hmm.
And as you age, I might suggest they get worse, go to a nursing home and check it out.
Right.
And we tend to overlook it.
Mm-hmm.
So I had this opportunity to play my violin live in a nursing home as part of a study to see the effects of music on aging.
Mm-hmm.
And I played for this group of elderly people. They were considering high functioning, but they would kind of come into lunch and they probably only listened to me because they had to, because they were there, they had nothing to do, they're waiting for the lunch doors to open.
Mm-hmm.
And there I was. So I, to show you how frozen they were, one time this one guy came in and fell on his face. I mean, I thought he was dead.
Wow.
And nobody looked.
Huh.
They're all frozen. They don't talk to anybody. They never looked at anybody. They just come and get a little fetal position and just sit there.
Hmm.
And just absolutely frozen. Now, I played very emotional music, often very sad music, whiny music, and music that would have been of their youth. So songs that they might have had, you know, memories with, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
And after about 6 months, they started talking to me. And after about 9 months, it was like a regular place. They were talking to each other like normal people.
Hmm.
So I decided, my thinking was that when you store a lot of negative baggage, after a while, it just weighs you down, and it just slows you down.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And if you have to, in order to release it, you have to honor it, you have to feel it, you have to at least acknowledge it to let it go. And one of the things about music is that rather than thinking about the specific event, like, well, how dare Frank do that to me, you can just feel, let's say, lonely, not even think of Frank, and let that memory go.
It sounds like your career's been very rewarding with all the work that you've done.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Yeah, so anyway, what I did in the music was I found that Bach, a man named Edward Bach, had these flowers because he believed that the flowers have an energy like the beauty of a rose,
mm-hmm.
The cheerfulness of a daisy, and that they would work on your spiritual and emotional and mental energies. And kind of like you could take medicine, which would be your physical, and if you correct your physical, then hopefully you feel better emotionally because you're not sick. This would be the other way. You clear up all your emotions, and then that positively affects your physical.
Hmm.
So anyway, he had these 12 soul flowers that had any emotional malady you could think of. So, like, for example, on here's one I did, agrimony was being pretentious, and it was supposed to represent the approval, let me see, of overcoming the challenge of trying to please people,
mm-hmm.
and not necessarily meeting it, just being an ongoing pleaser.
Mm.
So I took the music, and I made beautiful music, and then some of it was on a synthesizer, so at the fraction of a second after the tone sounded, I bent it out of tune.
Hmm.
So that it was done so quickly, you really couldn't tell what happened. So it was pretty bad.
Hmm.
And then when you contrasted that going into the section of music when it really was pretty and I didn't monkey with it, it was a huge contrast. And I have often pleased people and, you know, been polite when I really didn't mean it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was very aware that it very much felt like when I was being polite and didn't mean it and when I really did mean it.
Huh.
And it was very marked. And so what you could do is my thought is, just like in that nursing home where the people needed to touch base to let go of some of the old, I went into the old and kind of hopefully rattled it up.
Uh-huh.
And then I go into the new where you can actually practice an emotion.
Huh. Excellent.
So I did 12 symphonies. And then I also got the frequency equivalent of the flower. Now, this man named Dr. Bach, he found the flowers that also represented the same emotional success. And, you know, Shari hears frequencies on everything, including flowers. And so, anyway, through another method, I was able to come up with the frequency equivalents of each flower and add them in, too.
Excellent. All right, Jill. Well, we have about a minute left, and I want first to thank you so much for being here. You've been completely enlightening and interesting, and I hope we can have you back soon because you have so much knowledge that I'm just eating up, first of all. And we have your Stardust CD here. Is there any track you'd like us to play off?
Oh no, please yourself.
Okay, excellent.
Okay. All righty.
And do you want to tell us one more time your contact information if listeners want to?
Thank you.
Sure.
Thank you. Okay, it's JillIMatson@yahoo.com, if you'd like to know about the book. And my website is JillsWingsOfLight.com. And the Sound Healing newsletter and the free MP3s, actually there are two places. There's one at JillsHealingMusic.com and PaintYourSoul.com.
Great.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Jill, and we hope to see you soon. If anyone out there would like to have more information regarding sound health or the work that Sherry Edwards is doing, we offer classes. You can also become a client. So anything you might need, just give us a call at 678-9119. You can visit us on the web at soundhealthinc.com or at nutrasounds.com. And we thank you, and that concludes our show for today.
Thank you. Listen to us again on BBS Radio, and we'll be leaving you today with It's Time to Go by Jill Mattson from her album You Are Stardust.